Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Ryan Radzeski, here with Greg Baer, and we are the co-authors of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids.
This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging and relevant learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change.
On today's episode, we're talking with Ted Dintersmith, an author, film producer, and founder of What School Could Be, a nonprofit that provides an incredible collection of resources for educators interested in innovative practices and in preparing young people to live fulfilling lives. This is Ted's second appearance on the podcast. We'll put a link in the show notes to his first go-round, and we could not be happier to have him back with us again. Ted Dintersmith, welcome back to Remaking Tomorrow.
I'm thrilled to be back, and thank both of you for your great work. You guys are inspiring to the world and to me.
Well, Ted, thank you. And thinking about work, we're going to talk today about films and books, all in service to young people and possibilities in this country. I suspect that many of our listeners know you as the executive producer of the film Most Likely to Succeed. It was a 2015 documentary about education in this century. And others might also know you as the author of What School Could Be, or the founder of a global nonprofit by the same name. We want to talk first about one of your biggest new projects. It's a film called Multiple Choice. Can you tell us what it's about and how did you first come across this subject?
I did have experience with films in the past, and Most Likely to Succeed was, for me, a life highlight. I had sort of decided not to do any more documentaries. You know, to do them right, they're risky to start with and can be very expensive. So I had sort of said, okay, did that, it was great, fair enough. And then several people just sort of pushed me to visit this school in Winchester, Virginia. And I sort of convinced myself, okay, I'll go visit. But I'm like reminding myself on the way in, no documentary, Ted, no documentary, Ted, no documentary, Ted. And then I'm there and I'm just blown away. And I feel like they have made so many great decisions that I just sort of walked away saying, this is a story the world needs to hear. And as you know, the power of film is you can reach people emotionally. They see it and they feel it. And if a documentary is done really well, it can not just spark interesting discussion, but it can actually spur people to act. And so I visited this school, and the heart of it is this initiative they call the Innovation Center, where kids are diving into career-based learning. You can find these in other places, but what was distinctive about the way Winchester approaches it is that it's for all kids. And it's so cathartic. I mean, there's a bounce in these kids' step. It works unbelievably well for the kids that decide to go directly into career. Because it's for all kids, it works really well for the college bound. And if you don't mind, let me just explain that point, because it is the essential point, is if a kid opted to take welding or carpentry instead of an AP course, most selective colleges will penalize that kid for not challenging themselves rigorously with academic content. Something I think is all wrong, but a reality. Because this is the expectation there, the colleges say, well, they had to take these other things. And then the kids write great essays and they enter college with a far more informed point of view about what they want to get out of it. And I think the surprising thing about the film is you go in thinking it's about a high school. And in ways we might want to talk about, you come away saying it's a film about the power of community. So the film is out. You know, we've premiered at one film festival. We've got a bunch of other film festival commitments, but we're doing our same community screening model we did with Most Likely to Succeed, using the film as a vehicle to catalyze progress.
Ted, we've been mulling the film's tagline, which I'm going to read for the audience. It's just this: what if schools prepared kids for life? And I love that tagline because on one hand, it sounds obvious, right? Schools, of course, should prepare kids for life. But on the other hand, if you have to ask the question, then the question really becomes sort of a provocation. What if schools prepared kids for life? What is it that you hope audiences take away from Multiple Choice?
I think that communities need to understand there's real urgency today. You know, that when they read something in the paper that AI is going to eliminate millions of jobs and make it very difficult for fresh college graduates to find their way forward, that's what's happening. When they read that AI makes disinformation that much more powerful and persuasive, that's what's happening. So it is a challenging time. And I think what's interesting about this film is that it shows, what if we equip kids with the skills and mindsets to thrive no matter what AI does? And I think that's a timely message, a really important message. But I also think it sort of rebalances our thinking about what it means to be talented and smart, equipped with meaningful skills, because it is not the very narrow dimension we use to define academic success.
Ted, so you're doing screenings around the country, just as you did with Most Likely to Succeed. And imagine I'm a school board member at another school district in Virginia, or I'm the governor of Michigan, or I'm a high school principal in Pittsburgh. What is it that you hope I take away from this film? Films, as you say, are incredible stories that impart lessons, connect to us emotionally. But what do I do with it? What do I do with what I've learned about this amazing school in Winchester, Virginia?
People fall into different bins. I mean, they're the people that just believe that we need to do what we've always done and it's going to be fine. I hope this film at least challenges that point of view. I find a lot of people instinctively know we should be doing something different. And our goal with this film is to give them the power to reach others, to sort of convey that urgency and that opportunity in a way that's visceral. And then we complement the film with a great discussion guide and call to action plan. And so we're doing our best to sort of support those in the field who want to move forward. We're establishing a relationship with a top professional development consulting firm, Advanced Learning Partnerships, so that a community that screens the film can get a free onboarding orientation session to help them sort of guide their way. But I feel like given how fast AI is advancing, and it just gets better by the day, my goal, my hope with this film is that communities can use the film, pull people together, articulate their own vision of ways that they can organize learning challenges to prepare kids for adult life in a world where machines do the routine incredibly well for free.
You're talking about AI all the time and its impact of what it means for American high schools in particular. So if we magically put you in charge of any high school in America, what are the first 3, 4, 5 decisions you're going to make about instructional pedagogy, about curricula, about community engagement, knowing the things that you know and about which you advocate as you talk about the profound technological changes underway in this country?
I would focus on 3 things. You know, one is I would look hard at where kids are already getting career-based learning experience and build on that. Because every school has it in place. It's not that we're starting from nothing. You know, it's an after-school activity or a CTE center that's off on the side that could be invested in more and used more frequently and intensively. So find out what's happening now and build on that. Second thing is near and dear to the heart of what you guys do. I often say when people say, what's the one thing we could do to transform learning in our school? I say, check out what Remake Learning is doing and set a date in May for when you're going to have students exhibit meaningful, bold work they've done that affects positive change in their community. Because once that date is set, all sorts of things happen. Because nobody wants their kid to show up there, you know, with a multiple choice exam with a score on it. You know, like you're going to catalyze action because it's going to be visible and displayed and celebrated. So if I were in charge of a district, I would say, boom, May 19th, we're using Remake Learning's resources. We're going to have a celebration day for great student work. And the third thing I'd say is we are going to make sure every one of our K-12 kids graduates able to use AI effectively to be dramatically more productive in pursuing their goals and dreams. Because a kid who's 17 or 18 who's an expert on using AI, not developing these LLMs, but being able to use it effectively, that kid has a great set of career options in front of them. They're going to be the kid that can create their own career path. So more career-based learning, celebrate those projects that are affecting positive change in the community that help that kid develop hireable skills, AI expertise.
This is Greg Baer here with Ryan Rudzeski, and we're talking with Ted Dintersmith, an author, film producer, and passionate advocate for what schools could be.
Ted, you visited more schools probably than anyone else we know. To write What School Could Be, which is one of your books, you traveled to hundreds of schools across all 50 states, profiling teachers, educators, school leaders as they help kids develop what you call those essential competencies, agency, and deep knowledge. Now, that book, What School Could Be, came out more than 8 years ago now. It's been more than 10 years since your first film came out. And we're curious, you know, as you worked on multiple choice, in what ways have you seen education move in the right direction over the past decade? In what ways have you seen education move toward that vision that you just elaborated on?
If you don't mind, I'll step back. I mean, before getting involved with this initiative, which has really defined the last, 12, 15 years of my life, I was a venture capitalist. And there are a couple of things about that background I think are relevant here. As opposed to somebody with a business background where they were a CEO, I mean, CEOs think they know the answer and they tell people what to do. That is not me. Venture capitalists ask people, what are your dreams and goals and how can I support you? And I think that defines my worldview, it defines my views about education, and it really colored how I approach this because I felt like just because I'd been to school didn't mean I was the expert. So I put a lot of time into getting out in the field, observing, talking to, and really learning from the educators in the field. And I'm just a huge cheerleader for them and their professions. My daughter teaches at a K-8 school. I couldn't be more proud of her. And they're just unbelievable gifts to our community. So that really has defined my view. And as I kind of travel, I try to sort of impart to people both that the enthusiasm and the reinforcement that their work is really important, but at the same time, point out the fact that there's this massive disconnect between an obsolete education model and what kids need going forward. And so I feel a little bit like Paul Revere, like one is by land, two is by sea. Like it's going to eliminate jobs. It's going to turbocharge disinformation. The machines are coming. We need to get ourselves in gear to equip kids with the skills and mindsets that let them move past that. And I think we've done a really great job of showcasing that. If I look back, I feel like, I come from a world where people moved at warp speed and companies would shift directions overnight. Here, I feel like those percentages are flipped, right? And most of the world continues to do the obsolete model. And we celebrate and showcase those that are a bit challenging to that, that have gone rogue in some ways and show the power, the essential uplift from that shift in mindset and approach. I just worry that it's not happening fast enough. And so this is the basis for this major push this year with the new film and then a whole community screening initiative that we're organizing and doing our best to reach thousands of communities in the country to sort of say, one if by land, two if by sea, but there are enormous opportunities if you choose to pounce.
Ted, you just teased a new book, which we know is entitled Aftermath. So tell us about that book and what you're hoping it might bring to this landscape of change that you want to accelerate.
When I say the words, it's a book about math, I am fully bracing myself for the fact that many of your listeners will say, not for me. And the problem is that most people do carry negative feelings about math, which is painful to me. So this is a book I've been itching to write for quite some time because there are glorious, powerful, life-shaping ideas in math that every adult should understand. And these are ideas that affect us in our personal finances, our ability to be an informed citizen, our personal health decisions. They are really important, interesting ideas. And so most of the book explains those ideas, not with equations and formulas and symbols, but in words. I actually describe what a core math idea is and then offer a whole set of examples about how it affects you in day-to-day life. And my goal with the book has been to do for math what Freakonomics did for economics. But I also juxtapose it on what I consider to be just the wasteland of high school math. And for math teachers listening, I apologize. I really do. But the fact is that the math in our high schools is math that used to be of value in adult life before we had computers. But today, it's all done computationally. Once you get past fractions, decimals, percentages, and ratios, we don't live lives worrying about arc secants. We don't get up every day saying, I've got to prove cosine squared plus sine squared theta equals one. We're not like, I don't know what to do today because I can't remember what an irrational number is. Or, oh my gosh, I just absolutely need to factor that polynomial before I can move forward with this project. And I'm not opposed to it in an elective way for kids that just love the symbolic formalism. The kid that just can't wait to do Sudoku puzzles and feels like factoring polynomials is one step further and interesting, because some of those kids will go on to be professionals who make their living in math, abstract theoretical math. But the number who do that in life, I have it in my book, is lower than the number of people who become concert violinists or dental hygienist. Yet math is half of our high-stakes measures of schools. And so I feel like it's got the ability to sort of make us step back and rethink, what do we value in this school process? You know, I have a PhD in math modeling. I was in math-intensive businesses. I was with an early startup that did digital circuits to multiply numbers together quickly. I mean, the basic math that enabled the digital revolution. So I've been with this math side by side since the day of the slide rule. And the world has changed, but the curriculum hasn't. We, I think, owe it to kids that they're going to understand the ideas that change their life, ideas that could be the difference between living and dying, and stop punishing them if they don't have a teacher or tutors or parents that can somehow convince them that, yes, you know, the future of your life is going to depend on Taylor series expansion.
Ted, your passion about math comes through. You absolutely should be the author of this incredible book. And when Ryan and I think about the subject matters you might have tackled with both your newest film project and your newest book, you and I and Ryan and everyone else could come up with dozens of windows into things with which we need to wrestle in education. So why career-ready learning for every student? Why math? Why those two things right now at this precise moment?
I sort of feel like the story of my work has been, you know, kind of more of, less of. You know, what should we be doing a lot more of? And given that there are only finite number of hours in the school week, what should we be doing less of? And so we see a school where they're doing a lot more career-based learning and a lot less test prep. And you see it benefiting not just a few kids, it's benefiting all of these kids, whether they go directly to career or to college. I think the math is sort of a good counterbalance to that, because it really, I hope, powerfully shows what we're missing. When people are surveyed about math, it's like well over 80% of adults hate math. You know, they just feel like, God, it was my curse in school. You know, it made me feel dumb. And there are others that flew through it. But for most, it was really a painful ordeal. And if I can get that message through, that the opportunities are enormous, but to pursue those opportunities, we need to move past an obsession with data, which really serves the narrow purpose of ranking, sorting, and in many ways punishing. And I know you're friends as well with Pasi Sahlberg from Finland, and you know we stay in close contact. But I think it's very interesting that when Pasi shares what made all the advances possible in Finland, he attributes it to a budget crisis. And you say, like, budget crisis? How could that happen? Great progress in the face of a budget crisis? But what Pasi explains is that as the budget shrunk, they had to decide, do we want to put our dollars in data, or do we want to put our dollars in better teacher training and more challenging learning lessons in school? And they opted for the latter, and off to the races. And, you know, in the U.S., the story of the U.S. education system is we make kids study what's easy to test, not what's important to learn. And so I think the film has one perspective on kids who can't wait to be in school because it's real, because they're developing skills that matter, because it's helping them to find their lane. And I think the book, in a very different way, says, hey, wait a minute, something that school made you think you didn't like, something that you every day were asking, why am I learning this, actually had it all wrong. There are these great, bold, interesting ideas that you're going to absolutely love understanding, juxtaposed with endless hours on stuff you're never going to use.
Well, Ted, as somebody who's firmly in that 80% in how they feel about math, I cannot wait to read this book. We could talk to you for hours, but we're going to close with a little bit of a lightning round, in which I'm just going to read a couple of rapid-fire questions to you. You just respond with the first word or phrase that comes to mind. Sound good?
I hope so. Like, we will see.
We will see. All right. Favorite education movie that you did not produce?
Rise by One Stone.
Favorite education book that you didn't write? And I want you, Ted, to think very carefully about your answer here.
That's a no-brainer. Come
on. Right, favorite education book that isn't When You Wonder You're Learning?
Oh, shoot. Well, you know, I'm a big fan of In Search of Deeper Learning. Jean Mehta and Sarah Vine, they went to all these schools looking for where kids are really learning and ended up writing, quite honestly, never in classrooms, but in after-school activities. I thought that was a profound book, although I'd be remiss if I don't mention the whole body of work by my dear friend Tony Wagner, who, any of his books, but I was most moved by The Global Achievement Gap. So There are great books out there.
Thank you. And Jal has been a guest on this show.
That's right.
So for our listeners who are interested, go check that episode out. Most surprising way that math affects our daily lives that maybe we don't always think about.
Well, timely for today, I have a chapter on algorithms, and included in that, I talk about the algorithm that defines our lives minute by minute, which is the U.S. Constitution. And I don't think we're used to thinking of the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights as an algorithm, but I walk through exactly how it affects us, what the algorithmic steps are in that. And so, you know, you're used to thinking that math is sort of out there, you know, I got past it, it's no longer part of my life. But in those algorithms, you know, whether you can get a credit card, what your health insurance is, I mean, algorithms are what we watch, what news we get. Need to understand algorithms, but I don't think most people do.
And Ted, before we go, just one more question. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
Well, I'm a parent, and I've met with a lot of educators. I think that once you sort of step back and say, I'm not going to obsess about which college my kid goes to, and I'm even going to invite the possibility that you might not go to college, all things change. When you stop feeling like the world's going to end, depending on those acceptance letters, which tragically for some kids does end when those acceptance letters come in, you become far more relaxed about what's going on with school, and you start to rebalance that time and the kid's self-esteem toward passions, pursuits, and endeavors that actually are going to matter.
Thanks again to Ted Dintersmith, executive producer of Multiple Choice, the author of several books, including Aftermath, and founder of What School Could Be. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.